Few minutes late, soon after one, waiting for the House members who were engaged in caucus activity, and we try to respect that all the time. But so that Ms. Foley and the members of her staff can get on with this hearing, I thought maybe we could get started in hearing, and if they should have any questions, they can either see Ms. Baker or call your department for that. Thank you very much. Will you join us?
Chair Carter, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ramona Foley. I'm Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services with Children, Adults, and Families. And today we're going to start discussing our third major program area in CAF, and that is vocational rehabilitation. And I think we're going to try to cover this in about 50 minutes because Stephanie Parrish-Dale has put together a panel, and we want to have plenty of time for you all to hear the panel and ask any questions that you have of them.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I am Stephanie Parrish-Taylor, and I'm the Administrator of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation, and I'm pleased to be here this afternoon to talk about our program. Basically, vocational rehabilitation's work is to assist individuals with disabilities that result in impediments to employment to maintain, regain, or enter the workplace for the first time. We have four primary programs. The first is our basic vocational rehabilitation services program, our youth transition program, supported employment services, and the independent living program. Vocational rehabilitation, through the work of our counselors and support staff, work with individuals to find them eligible for our services. Having a disability is simply not enough to gain services. Those disabling conditions must result in barriers to employment. Our services are individualized and targeted to individuals. We may have people come in with the same disabling condition, but arrive at very different vocational goals and plans of services to assist them in accomplishing those goals. Our services are time limited. To be considered successfully rehabilitated, you have to be employed for a minimum of 90 days in a competitive setting in the community and earn wages commensurate with other people doing the work that you were doing. You could think of our youth transition program as a subset of the vocational rehabilitation program. It is a program we do in collaboration with over 40 school districts across the state, serving about 1,300 students a year. And we work with schools to assist students in making that transition from special ed services to the adult world of work and post-secondary education. It's a program that we have received national recognition for. The supported employment program is again a subset of our VR program. It's targeted to those with the most severe disabilities who will require intensive services, and in order to maintain employment in the community in integrated settings, once we're completed, they have support services provided by a variety of nonprofit organizations in the community that follow along with them after we have closed them successfully from our program. Our principal partners in supported employment are mental health and developmental disabilities. Independent living program are actually dollars that we pass through to 9 centers for independent living across the state. Many of these centers are staffed with individuals with disabilities, and their goal is to assist people to be as independent as possible in their homes, their communities, and their jobs. Centers for independent living have 4 core services: their information and referral, independent living skills training, peer counseling, and both systems and individual advocacy. If you would turn to page 120, at the bottom you'll see a map of the state and where our offices and outstations are located. The Stars donate our major branch offices, and the DOTs are our outstations. And we will have staff outstationed either on a part-time or full-time basis in a number of our partner agencies. Page 121 gives you a chart that breaks the state out by county. You can see the numbers of individuals that we serve by county, our employment outcomes, as well as information about the average wage those individuals make within those counties and the hours worked, and our estimate of their annual earnings and the tax revenues that will be paid on that income. We serve all Oregonians with the exception of the individuals who experience blindness, and they are served by our sister organization, the Commission for the Blind. People typically have medical, cognitive, or psychiatric diagnoses, and more often than not, they have one or more of those at a time. It's rare that we see individuals coming in with a single disabling condition. Typically, our clients are between the ages of 18 and 65. We serve a significant number of people who receive either Social Security disability benefits or supplemental security income. And those individuals, because of that entitlement, are presumed eligible for our services. If you look at the bottom of page 122, you'll see a graph that displays our caseload. A frequent question that we get when we make presentations is we typically talk about our placements, which are somewhere around 3,000, and a caseload of about 18,000, and people kind of blink and want to know what that is. Our clients break out over a series of stages or steps in the process. And in looking at that graph, you see that applications represents the largest group of people in our caseload. These are people who have inquired for services. We're in the process of working with them to gather medical information, having evaluations done to make an eligibility determination. And some of those people fall out, so the eligibility column is smaller than applications. And as people move through the process, you will see folks falling out for one reason or another. And so when we talk about our caseload, we are talking about the aggregate of those individuals in those various stages. Turning to page 123, we'll see another graph that provides you some additional information about the demographics on our caseload. There's information about the gender makeup, further breakdown of the age makeup of our caseload, and information about the ethnicity of those individuals that make up the caseload. At the top of 124 is again another chart that breaks out how our caseload looks in terms of disability impairment. And you'll note that there's both a primary and a secondary disability noted. And in most instances, we are checking at least two disabling conditions, and there may be three or more on a regular basis. Services are delivered in our 34 field offices. Some of those are freestanding. Others are co-located with our DHS or workforce partners. Our YTP programs are delivered primarily at local school districts with youth transition specialists hired by those school districts in a financial collaboration with vocational rehabilitation. Those specialists also work quite closely with our local branch offices. Supported employment services are those follow-along services. They are typically provided by private nonprofits out in the community. And finally, the independent living services, as I noted earlier, are provided through 9 centers for independent living across the state. Why are these services significant to Oregonians? The chart at the top of 125 helps to answer that question. We have a significant number of individuals who are receiving Social Security disability benefits that we serve and we assist in returning to work. Keeping in mind, these are folks who, in order to get Social Security benefits, have been told that they're unable to work. We've gotten people back into the mainstream. We have a reduced reliance on public benefit systems, and it's more than cash and medical, because these individuals are often using public housing and other subsidies that they might be available for. And FY 2006, we put nearly 3,000 Oregonians to work. Of those, there were 348 youth served through our YTP program that we put to work. And what we know as a consequence of research conducted by the University of Oregon, that these kids break the cycle of disability, or rather, they don't get on the road to a life of disability. There's a very high success rate for them continuing to work, and what we know that young people working continue to be working adults. We see them going on to post-secondary education. We see with a number of young people with disabilities a path into drug addiction, substance abuse, and the criminal justice system. And these young people, by and large, are avoiding those outcomes. And when you think about that across their lifespan and across the systems that the state of Oregon supports, there's tremendous savings to the system in being able to intervene with these young people early and get them on the track of employment. I think much the same can be said for a number of the adults that we serve. And through the independent living program, more than 2,000 Oregonians were more independent in their daily lives as a consequence of those services. On page 126 begins the discussion about our performance measures. OVRS is responsible for one of the department's 29 key performance measures, and that is key performance measure number 3. It is the percentage of the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Service consumers with a goal of employment who obtained employment. The goal for this measure is 66% of consumers with employment plans obtaining employment. If you turn to the top of page 127, there's a chart that details our performance since the year 2000. You will see that in 06, we were at 64.5%. We're not quite at the 66% mark, but we are significantly better than we were just 2 years ago when we were at 56.5%.
Any questions on the performance measures, Senator Renters?
Hello?
Senator Gordley? I apologize. In my observation, reading your material, and I think you were rather kind. You were as kind as you should be to yourself in looking at the youth statistics as it compares nationally. Because the national average was 43%, and we're at 65% of your youth were employed. So I'm going to give you a pat on the back, because that's considerably higher than nationally. And it would be helpful if, even with the measurement that you've set at 66%, how the overall measurement compares nationally of your target. That would be very helpful, Stephanie.
Chair Carter, Senator Winters, if we turn to page 129, there are the federal standards and indicators that we have to respond to, as well as the state key performance measure. And standard 1.2 speaks to our outcomes. as compared to both our partners in the region, Washington General, Alaska Combined, and Idaho General. In order to pass the federal standard, it's 55.8%. And as you can see there, we were at 64.5%.
Madam Chair, I think it's well to highlight that they exceed the national standards, and I just needed to point that out, Stephanie.
Thank you, Chair. Senator Winters.
Congratulations.
Senator Fordley.
Thank you very much. Would like your assistance better understanding the relationship between the 79.5% increase in the percentage of individuals who achieved employment outcomes, who have their own outcome, their own income, as a primary source of support, as is described on page 125, okay, relating that information to this key performance measure.
Okay. That measure is actually one of our federal standards and indicators, and what we're asked to do is to look at the percentage of people coming in the door for services and what their primary source of support is. And then at closure, we're asked to look again at what their primary source of support is. And for those individuals who have obtained an employment outcome, there was an increase in 79.5% who reported as their primary source of support their own earnings. And so this is an indication that as an outcome of our services, that people are more self-supporting and less dependent on publicly funded benefits.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This information is also very remarkable. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Again, looking at page 127, there's information about the average wage for our consumers as well as the hours worked. That's probably best captured on the graph on the top of page 127, where we're able to report the numbers of employment outcomes, the wage per hour, the hours per week, from 2004, and it is not 2204, it is in fact 2004, forward for a partial count for 2007. And going down the page to the next chart, we were able to do some comparison across the other programs in the region. We're proud to say that of the 80 federally funded programs providing public vocational rehabilitation across the nation, we were one of 18 that passed all of the standards and indicators for FY 2005.
Say that one more time. Would you say that one more time?
Okay. Of the 80 federally funded public vocational rehabilitation programs across the country, we were one of 18 that passed all of our standards and indicators. We did it in 2004, and we expect to do it in 2007.
Great.
On pages 129 and 130, those standards and indicators are displayed. There are our results as well as the results from the other general agencies in the region. And if there are questions about those, I'd be happy to answer those
questions.
Moving forward to talk about our quality and efficiency improvements, I would start first by talking about our case management system known as ORCA, or the Oregon Rehabilitation Case Automation System. We implemented this in 1996, and it provides support both to our counselor activities. They enter their case notes, their eligibility determinations, their plans that they develop in consultation with consumers into that system. It also generates and tracks payment documents. It helps us manage our budgets both at the individual counselor level, and it rolls up into the branch and the state level. It is the thing that allows me to bring in real-time data. It has been developed to meet the federal reporting requirements that we have, and the Rehabilitation Service Administration collects quite a bit of data, and it's been very helpful in reporting out about our performance. We think it's a good system, and other folks think it's a good system. Public knowledge, who worked with the department on the staffing and process improvement study, noted that VR counselors spent an average of less than 26% of their time entering case notes and documentation for key steps in the VR process. They attributed this to VR's much more sophisticated information technology system called Orca. The additional piece of that Orca is the contractor has built a coalition of other state VR agencies, and we share the cost of the development of this program, and we meet routinely to tweak and improve the system. We're scheduled to update the system later this year. The cost of that is fairly insignificant when we look at the cost of these systems in general. They've been extremely responsive to us and helping us tweak the system, and they've built a system that's evolved over time where we are far more able to customize it to our needs at the local level using our own technical staff, and we've been very delighted to have this system in place, and it's made a tremendous difference for us in managing our workload, and we're looking forward to the proposed changes to ORCA to bring us some more efficiencies in doing our work.
I want to one question. How different is the data entry of the counselors with VR than is your caseworkers?
Chair Carter, it's an entirely different system. It's a freestanding system, and our system probably is not as current. Our system's probably a bit more obsolete, and I do think ORCA is seen among state agencies as one of the more advanced data collection systems.
So are we working toward that end?
Chair Carter, we are. That's the thing called the Statewide Automated Child Welfare Information System called SACWIS. That should be up around 09 is the latest date we have. But ours right now is a pretty archaic system on the child welfare side.
Because it sounds like we don't need to go national to find how to be successful or to work with greater levels of equity when we have the system already in place in our state. Reporting with that kind of reporting, data entry reporting.
Correct, Chair Carter. Most of the other programs, because they're federally funded, you're required to follow the federal model for whatever that data collection is. And I suspect that rehab follows a federal model in terms of the kinds of data collected. Yeah, every one of the federal stovepipes has its own set of requirements that you have to meet as you develop those systems. Overall, the idea is someday those systems should link up, and you should actually be able to cross those systems. Some of you all have been around hearing this for a lot of years. We're not there yet, but we certainly need to know if we have a vocational rehabilitation parent in a caseload in VR, when they have children, those needs become part of what the case assessment is, and right now the systems don't easily connect to each other.
Thank you.
Another technology advance that we've done over the last 2 years is the successful pilot of Next Talk, and then the extension of that throughout the agency. Next Talk is a computer-based program that functions like a TTY or a text telephone. Instead of waiting for the phone to ring, figuring out which end of the phone goes in what end of the cradle on your desk, and typically we only have one or two of these phones in our branch offices, these calls literally come up onto the computer screen, sort of like a text message, and people can go back and forth. It's on every desktop in our agency at this point. It's eliminated the cost of replacing the TTYs and repairing them. And it's given, I think, us a greater ability to get better customer service because someone's not running to find the available TTY to take a phone call. And it can happen on every desktop, as I said in the program. So we're pretty pleased with this advancement that we were able to do in the last 2 years. I'd like to move on to talking about the work that we've been able to do with the Addictions and Mental Health Division. As you know, they have been working on evidence-based practice, and we work with them in collaboration on one that focuses on employment. We've been able to work in three pilot sites across the state, and we have seen, I believe, as a consequence of these efforts, about a five-point increase in our employment outcomes for the population, which is quite challenging to work with. And we are seeing that we are exceeding the national average and serving this population. The chart at page 131 shows some of the work that we've been doing in the state.
Excuse me, Ms. Parrish Taylor. Senator Boardman?
Thank you. Before we leave that point, Ms. Parrish Taylor, if you could share with us what's making the difference? Why are we seeing the increase?
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, the model that we're using is an evidence-based model that has come out of Dartmouth College, and what it looks at is a team of individuals who wrap around the individual, and there's a shift in this, in that that's not a new model, and wrapping staff around a challenging population and meeting them at a very individual level. This particular strategy incorporates a belief that people with psychiatric illness can work, and driving that belief through how you do business to accomplish that. So there is an employment specialist on the mental health side that's involved. Our VR counselors are intimately involved in those teams. They're frequently on site with those programs. They develop really strong relationships. And at least one of those sites, we have incorporated benefits planning, which helps people understand the impact of returning to work on their benefits, which has been a significant barrier for folks. And with evidence-based services, there's a fidelity scale. And what we've been guilty of historically is we'll take somebody else's good program, we'll bring it to replicate it. Sometimes we don't have enough resources. Sometimes we think, well, maybe they weren't quite right on this. And so we kind of we don't really replicate the program. We do something different. And when it doesn't work, we just throw up our hands and move on to something else. But the fidelity scale prescribes how you implement the program. And basically, if you follow the recipe, the cake comes out of the oven. And I think, in addition to that, the real focus on recovery that's involved in this and the belief that these individuals can go to work and going at that with that attitude, I think, has made a real difference.
That's a powerful response, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's good to hear about this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions. The first one is, thank you for being here today. I appreciate your testimony. On the Addictions and Mental Health Division, do they do any employment services, or is that all handled through VRS?
They do employment services through contracts with local county programs. There's actually been a strong history, in not across the state, but certainly in key places in the state, of doing employment. And there have been different iterations of what we thought was best practice in terms of getting people to work. And quite frankly, the evidence-based practice that we're currently doing is kind of the flavor of the day, if you will. So yes, and we are working both through the Office of Vocational Rehabilitation Services and our Oregon Competitive Employment Project, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, to partner with them around the work that they're doing and the things that we can do in collaboration with them to improve outcomes.
Thank you. Follow up? Thank you. Well, one of the things that occurred to me listening to this is, it's always struck me as interesting that a variety of divisions do some version of vocational